So I've set up the presentation sort of timeline oriented. After a sort of quick overview to orient everybody to this regime, I was going to try to go through the decision points in a chronology from filing the return to resolving any dispute you might have in court. I'm going to try not to focus on the particular rules. They've been out there for quite some time, but sort of focus more on the strategic and practical considerations as you hit various decision points, you know, at these different parts of time along the way. If I do skip over some rule that you want more detail on, again, please feel free to ask. I've also, well, just one other thing. I've tried, even though I've done this in a timeline, audits are never linear, you know, so there's never sort of one sequential path, or all audits follow one sequential path. There is some back and forth that I might have in the slides because that reflects the twists and turns of audits. So I apologize in advance if I jump back and forth in the slides, as I just did now. So the new audit regime, similar to but very different from the TEFRA audit regime, it still is an audit conducted at the partnership level. It applies to all partnerships without regard to any small partnership exception, and it's, unless you timely file an election to opt out of this regime. And we'll talk about that election as well. It has the nice phrase, partnership-related items determined at the partnership level. Very broad scope in terms of this audit. So virtually everything that you can think of is going to be a partnership-related item and included in the scope of these audits. The old TEFRA rules had lots of disputes about what was included in a TEFRA audit and what was a partner-level consideration. Because everything really is at the partnership level, it's only the partnership statute that matters. There was lots of disputes previously about different items, whether the partner's statute applies, whether the partnership statute applies. The new regime does away with all that, so it's only the partnership's statute of limitation that matters. The new concept in this is this so-called imputed underpayment. So if the audit results in an imputed underpayment, we'll talk a little bit more about that later, then the partnership is required to pay that imputed, the partnership is required to pay that imputed underpayment unless it takes steps to pass that amount off to its partners, one of which is the so-called push-out election. Again, we'll talk more about that later. If the partnership doesn't pay the imputed underpayment, the government can come back against the individual partners and collect from the individual partners for their proportionate amount. So as you can see, this is very similar to, but also very different from TEFRA. And this regime enacted in 2015 was in response to a lot of criticisms of the TEFRA regime. The TEFRA rules were viewed as complex, lots of litigation involved in the TEFRA rules, and it led to what was perceived as very low audit rates. One of the key differences, there was lots of complexity in TEFRA, but in TEFRA, you had the centralized audit at the partnership level, but then the government was required to assess and collect at the partner level. Not quite the same push out, but the same idea where now the burden was on the IRS to go find all the individual partners, assess and collect on the individual partners. A key difference in the BBA regime is that you have not only a centralized audit, but a centralized assessment and collection regime. So the default is going to be that the partnership pays the imputed underpayment together with whatever penalties and interest might apply, but that's only a default. So the burden is then on the partnership and the partners. If they don't like that result or they want a different result, they can go through steps to change that result and move the adjustment to one or more partners and depending upon different years. It's interesting that the aspect of TEFRA was the burden was heavily on the IRS, okay? So they could start the audit at the partnership level, but then it was on the burden on the IRS to go assess and collect at the partnership level. Under the BBA, the partner level, the BBA flips the perspective. So now virtually everything, predominantly, defaults favor the government, but the taxpayers, the partnerships and the partners, had the ability to do something to adjust that result. And we can talk about more of those instances which affect your strategic considerations as you move through an audit. So just to orient you a little bit more, so as I said, it was enacted in the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015. That was November of 2015. So we're now 4 years since the statute has been enacted. There were a few modest changes in December of 2015, quickly after the statute was enacted. Lots of discussion about technical corrections. And then we had a bill finally in 2018 with some fairly meaningful changes to the statute. Then we had a whole series of regulations. I'm not going to go through each of these. This is sort of a resource, perhaps, for you in looking at the origin of all these rules. The one picture was, except all of the proposed rules are now final, with one exception. The February 2018 rules on tax attributes, basis and tax attributes of the partnership, is the only one that has not yet been finalized, so keep your eye out for that one. Otherwise, we're not anticipating or expecting any more final regulations with respect to the partnership audit regime.